We'll move on to the last case, which is EnviroTech International versus United States Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Morford?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. To please the court, the EPA has invoked the deliberative process exemption to withhold documents requested by EnviroTech under the Freedom of Information Act. In the lower court and here today, EnviroTech argues that an agency's authority is a fundamental criteria in defining what the deliberative process is, and that is based on a number of fairly well-settled principles. The deliberative process has been defined as that process by which the agency defines its policy or makes its law, makes its rules. It's also fairly well settled that the court must pinpoint specifically which rule or policy this process is related to. It's also well settled that the documents themselves must be pre-decisional before the decision made and deliberative about that decision. At the same time, underlying all those is another principle that says an agency has the authority to act given to it by Congress and no more. When you intersect those principles of law, if an agency does not have the authority and is engaged in an ultra-virus act or ultra-virus decision, there is actually no decision that can be made. No decision that can be made, no policy that can be made, and therefore no deliberative process that can be related to it. In fact, we're saying that
an exploration of an environmental problem, it would seem, prima facie at least, to be something the EPA could be engaged in, isn't it?
In this case, that is...
They were engaged in trying to determine what the rules of regulations of immigration ought to be or something of that sort. One might buy into this ultra-virus argument.
Okay.
How are we going to... You know, you're going to make an ultra-virus case out of every FOIA request.
Well, this case is fairly limited. The rule, the statute that the EPA is operating under now is Subchapter 6 of the Clean Air Act. We call it SNAP. It deals specifically with stratospheric ozone protection. What the documents we asked for deal with toxicology, the effect of the chemical in the cells of rats, and workplace exposure levels. Nowhere in SNAP, in Subchapter 6, is EPA given the authority. Basically, nowhere in the Clean Air Act is the EPA given authority to talk about toxicology related to workplace exposure levels.
Well,
that's OSHA's job.
But the Clean Air Act directs EPA to establish a list of substitutes for Class 1 and Class 2 substances that are and are not safe alternatives for particular uses. And given that statutory directive, isn't it at least arguable that the EPA has authority to recommend limits on workplace exposure to alternatives like N-propyl bromide?
Actually, it creates confusion in the workplace when the EPA does that, and I don't think the statute actually gives it the authority. I think 7671N, which is titled Authority of the Administrator, specifically states that in Subchapter 6, the EPA has the authority to regulate substances which cause adverse effects on the human health or the environment because it affects the stratospheric ozone layer. None of the documents which ETI has requested under FOIA has anything to do with stratospheric ozone. It has to do with toxicology, something that Subchapter 6 is totally irrelevant to Subchapter 6.
But, you know, as we sit here, we don't know whether the EPA's rule, which is this point it's only a proposed rule. We don't know if it'll survive judicial review or not. And let's assume that a court, presumably the D.C. Circuit, eventually agrees with you that the EPA has exceeded its authority. Don't we undercut the purpose of the deliberative process privilege if we say that internal agency discussions lose their protection when someone can convince the court later on that the agency's final rule was ultra-virus?
In this case, okay, I would agree with an EPA argument that they said that there may be certain times on one end of the scale where the process and documentation could clearly sometime have been, okay, well within the authority. In this particular case, though, it's totally on the opposite spectrum. There's absolutely no authority under subchapter 6 of the Clean Air Act for the EPA to look into toxicology and workplace exposure
levels.
Can't
there be cooperation among government agencies? I mean, I assume OSHA has some interest in this.
Well, the Occupational Safety and Health Act does provide that OSHA is the federal agency.
Well, can't they cooperate with the EPA in conducting research?
There is a regulatory scheme, but I think we're getting off the issue that is actually before this court, and that issue is whether an agency's authority is relevant at all to the, defining the deliberative process. The lower court never got to the question, never made a decision regarding the question of whether EPA had the authority to do this, to regulate in this area at all. Basically, the lower court said, effectively, that an agency authority is entirely irrelevant to defining the deliberative process.
Well, this is sort of a preemptive effort, I guess, to go in and keep the EPA from getting off the plantation, so to speak. They've got certain duties, and you're trying to go in and intercept them because you perceive, obviously, your product might get intercepted, that they're going out on the fringe, if not outside the bounds of what they're supposed to do, and might detrimentally affect the reputation of your product in the process. Is that the way this works? And that you want to stop it before somebody who isn't supposed to be doing what they're doing does it?
Well, I don't think there is a way to stop the EPA from doing something.
Well, it is. I mean, okay. Stop it, but you get the documentation that you can then wave around and say this is all wrong, et cetera, as opposed to, as Judge Rovner was suggesting, well, when they put this argument, I should say the rule, out for comment, is it there yet?
Yes, it is a comment period.
Okay,
well,
then I don't... Maybe you're in that process as well. I don't know. And then whatever the comment is, objecting, say this is completely outside what they should have done, et cetera, and they shouldn't be opining with, I don't know, what they did. Did they use this stuff in the final rule?
Well, we don't know what the stuff is, so we don't know if they used it or not. I guess
the final rule has some impact.
The final rule will have some impact, but we know that the EPA, as up till now, has not used all the information that they've been given them, because we've given them information that is nowhere to be found in the docket or in the proposed rule.
Well, I guess what we're trying to say is it would seem at some point when all of this comes to a head that there should be at least an opportunity to explore and object and do whatever, as opposed to coming in and trying to get something through FOIA that may not have been used. It may have been thrown away fast. I don't know.
And we don't know. One of the things, the need for the documents is really irrelevant under FOIA, our need for the documents. But basically, we did this, the FOIA was actually filed back in, I think, January of 2002, fairly long time before the proposed rule came out. And in that time, the concern was worker safety and confusion in the marketplace. The EPA has been very vocal at seminars over the last 8 years. This has been going on for 8 years. about what they were doing. They're looking at toxicology. They're looking at workplace exposure levels, which has the actual marketplace in a considerable amount of confusion. What we would like, what we ask for, is give us your toxicology documents that you're looking at. Tell us what you're doing, okay? Because it has nothing to do with the rule under SNAP, and EPA itself says that. In the proposed rule, it makes the recommendation for workplace exposure, but also says the comments, their recommendations, are no part of the rule. And that's consistent with what EPA said back in March of 1994 in its implementing regulations, that their comments and recommendations are no part of the rule. We're not trying to stop EPA from making a recommendation, but we don't believe they can invoke the protection of FOIA for those documents that they're compiling that are not related to policy or rule.
Okay. Well, your time's up here. Dale?
Morning. May it please the court, counsel.
Do you have any idea when the proposed rule will be finalized?
I understand it won't be until next year. But the public comment period is closed now, so it's moving forward. Your Honor, Envirotech's argument is without merit for two reasons. First, as the district court properly held, the deliberative process privilege doesn't depend on nice distinctions about the scope of an agency's regulatory authority. And second...
Well, is that an absolute posture? I mean, suppose we're looking at an immigration problem, which they... on the face of things, have no business doing. Would that be invoked as a matter for pursuing a FOIA request?
Right. That's why I use the term nice distinction. Envirotech cited some cases in their brief here that deal with a situation where agency decision makers were compiling a list of friends and enemies so they could use the privileges of their office to further their personal agenda. And the court in those cases found that doesn't have anything to do with the legitimate government process. And that'd be a similar type of situation maybe to what you're talking about, where they're starting to enact immigration regulations at the EPA. But of course, we're not dealing with anything like that here. Here, the most that Envirotech has is a doubtful challenge to a rule that has yet to be issued. And once it's issued, there's a forum in which they can make whatever challenges they want to make. As long as an agency is acting arguably within the scope of what's within the legitimate business of that agency, the deliberative process privilege ought to apply to further the purposes of the privilege. The idea is to encourage frank and open discussion among agency decision makers without fear of public criticism. A lot of times the deliberations that we want to protect may be about the very issue of whether the agency has jurisdiction to do what it's thinking about doing. If you were to adopt the rule that Envirotech is proposing, then any time that an agency approached the outer limits of its regulatory authority, the agency decision makers would have to count on the fact that if a judge were to later on find they had overstepped their authority, then all of their deliberations would be exposed to public scrutiny, and that would frustrate the purposes of the rule. Another purpose of the rule is to prevent the premature disclosure of policies and the rationales for proposed policies before a final decision is made. And of course, this case illustrates that danger better than pretty much any set of facts I could imagine. At the time that the FOIA request was made here, EPA was still deliberating. And in fact, at the time of the district court litigation, they were still deliberating. There wasn't even a proposed rule. So what Envirotech was doing was asking the district court to step in and tell the EPA, disclose all your deliberative documents, only because one potential result of those deliberations might be off limits to the agency.
How do you respond to their argument in the reply brief that if the EPA is not making a binding rule on the workplace exposure to N-propyl bromide, then the agency has not engaged in the type of deliberative process that the privilege was meant to.
Well, the deliberative process that they were engaging in was whether to list NPB as a safe alternative for particular uses. That was their deliberation. You know, they could list it as a prohibited alternative. That was another option under the statute. Or they could list it as a safe alternative for particular uses. Now, I think the obviously the reason for having alternatives to these chemicals is to protect the stratosphere. But the idea behind listing a chemical as a safe alternative or a prohibited alternative for particular uses is the effect that it may have on human beings. So if a substance is toxic and will kill people if they use it, EPA isn't supposed to list that as a safe alternative. They should list that as a prohibited alternative.
Is part of the problem then in the, I guess in the marketplace, whether this product is, I don't even know what it is. Is it a product that is produced now and distributed, or is it a product that they'd like to distribute, or is it something that, pending whatever the EPA is doing, it will affect whether or not it's marketable?
I think it's an element that's in products that are being marketed now by Envirotech.
I see. So it's not, I guess what the confusion in the marketplace that he refers to would have to have some impact on its marketability, I guess,
right,
depending on what the EPA does. And they're trying to find out what is it's doing, if anything, with the FOIA information, as opposed to waiting. I don't know what the final rule is going to do, whether it's going to incorporate that or not. Whatever has been put out for comment is already fully exposed, so I suppose some of that interaction has already taken place in the comments, but right?
I think that's true, and the rule is proposed. To finish my... I'm sorry.
Sort
of a long-winded answer to your question, but just to set it up, in terms of why they're doing that, you know, they could list it as a prohibited alternative, say nobody can use NPB, or they can list it as a safe alternative. Well, toxic substances, as we all know, may well be safe if they're used at a minimal level, but if the exposure is unlimited, you know, it could be extremely dangerous. So if EPA is going to carry out that mission, quite reasonable for them to say, we'll list NPB as a safe alternative for these uses, but based on that, we're assuming now that your exposure level isn't going to exceed a given amount. And I don't know whether EPA would have the authority to set a workplace exposure limit per se, but they decided they weren't going to do that. They defer to OSHA to set an actual limit. But in order to qualify and explain what they mean when they say we're recommending this as a safe alternative, they felt that they needed to make some comments about the exposure levels that were going to be existing. And that's entirely consistent with their mandate under Section 612. As far as the other purpose of the deliberative process rule that I was addressing, was the idea of preventing the disclosure of policies before they're actually decided upon. And that's exactly what Envirotech was asking here. And the only basis that Envirotech had for doing that was its argument that one potential result of those deliberations would be off-limits to the agency. And, of course, that's always the case. Anytime an agency is deliberating on anything, one potential result of those deliberations is that they could overstep the bounds of their authority. So if you were to accept the rule that Envirotech is advocating here, that would swallow up the deliberative process privilege entirely. It's just not workable to do it that way. And, you know, for the reasons that I think I covered in response to Judge Rovner's questions, I think there's really no realistic dispute about the fact that EPA was doing here was within their authority under Section 612. If Envirotech wants to pursue that argument, they have a forum in which they can do that in due course in a different venue in the D.C. Circuit. If there are no further questions, I would ask that the district court be affirmed.
Okay, and I believe your time has expired, is that correct? Yeah. So this case will be taken under advisement. And that completes our